Your dreams are bigger, bolder, and more badass than the life you're living now, but something just keeps getting in the way. Join certified coach and former therapist Diane Wingert for the Driven Woman podcast. She'll show you how to get rid of whatever is holding you back so you can stop spinning your wheels and up-level your life. Get ready to hop in and buckle up. This is the Driven Woman podcast, and we're heading for the fast lane.
Well, hey, Driven Woman, and welcome back. I'm excited to be sharing with you one of my client success stories. Today, you're going to meet Dallas. Now, let me give you a little backstory. Dallas is a highly educated professional woman who knew that she was capable of so much more than she was demonstrating in her career, but didn't really know where the real problem lay. I mean, is it her motivation? Is it her expectations of herself, her habit, her mindsets, or some combination of the above? And how do you figure that out? Well, luckily for Dallas, one of her friends had worked with me and told her about the great experience and outcome we created. She then listened to a few episodes of the podcast and thought, this might be just what I need. Now, we talk about why she decided to work with me, what we focused on, and how over time we were able to completely transform her thinking and her habits around money and being a lawyer in such a way she now reaches her goals without stress and without beating herself up. It wasn't a perfect and predictable path, and at one point, Dallas even felt like she had lost sense of where we were going. So we also talk about that, what we both refer to as the messy middle of our coaching work together. Here are a couple more highlights of this conversation. We talk about toxic productivity and its alternative, right now goals versus legacy goals, and the difference between pain, suffering, and what I call unnecessary suffering. You're also going to want to listen for this episode's mic drop moment, where Dallas shared how she learned to, quote, stop selling from a hypothetical pocketbook. This episode is one of my favorites. I cannot wait to introduce you to Dallas and to the incredible work we did together. Here we go. So today I'm welcoming back one of my favorite clients because she's smart, she's funny, she's highly educated, and she likes me. Like, what could be better than that? We are going to talk about all the wonderful outcomes that we created. She was highly engaged and it was an interesting journey. I think you would agree. And so I want to start with why you decided to hire me, because I market to women who are ambitious, who are driven, who are motivated, but there's a gap between where they are and where they want to be. So let's talk about where you were when we first started to work together.
Sure. So I found you, Diane, because a friend of mine from high school, who I remain friends with on Facebook and Instagram, I think had worked with you. And that led me to the podcast. And then that led me to, I think this could be useful. So reached out to you and we set up some coaching sessions. I think that, you know, you hit the nail right on the head there. Like, I've had this idea of, this is what I'm capable of, and it's a level up here, and this is where I'm performing at, and it's a level, you know, significantly below what I'm capable of. And that has been kind of, I don't know, a theme on and off, you know, through my professional career. I think in particular, you know, in 2020, 2021, I just had this sense of, I am married, I have four kids, they're teenagers. And I just had this kind of sense all the time of when I was working, I was feeling like, oh man, I wish I wasn't working. I shouldn't be here right now. I should be at this activity, home, doing something, you know, these last few years that they'll be in the house. and then when I was home or, you know, doing things with kids, I would be like, oh my gosh, I'm so behind. I need to get back to work. And just never really feeling like I was in balance in some ways. And I think that part of that was this sort of feeling of never saying, okay, I did that. It's good enough. It's really well done. And it's over and I can put that to bed and then turn to the next thing. So I think it's all interconnected, but the common theme really was that sort of gap between, I am really capable. I am really smart. I am really talented. It's really easy for me to do a lot of things, but the output or the results don't seem, in my estimation, to really capture that, to really reflect that ability that is there.
It totally makes sense, Dallas. And I hear this from, I would say, close to 100% of my clients. And I think there's plenty of women listening now who are thinking, yeah, doesn't every woman feel that way? And what I think is so fascinating is that a lot of women believe, well, if I had more money, I wouldn't feel that way. Or if I had a better education, I wouldn't feel that way. Or if I was in like a professional job or a professional career path, I wouldn't feel that way. But you are an attorney. Like you have a lot, I mean, hello, you have a lot of education and training. You have a lot of expertise.
Yeah.
And your hourly rate is probably a lot more than some people who are saying, I'm not fulfilling my potential. So I think it's just really important as women that we validate the fact that a whole lot of us feel that we're falling short of our potential, and it doesn't go away with a certain amount of education or at a certain income level, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, one of the realizations I've had kind of throughout my life is we get on this like sort of path of we go to college, we go to maybe get a graduate degree, we get our first job, and it's like this upward path, you know, and we think, okay, well, I got into this college and everything's going to be great. But really all the work you did to get to that level, now you're like the worst, not the worst person, but you're like the lowest level, the least experienced, the, you know, the out of at the level you were before, you're maybe the pinnacle, right? Because you're trying to get these test scores, you're trying to achieve this performance, and you get what you want and you get what you think you, what everyone is telling you you should go after, and you get there and you're like, okay, I just became the dumbest person in the room, you know, in some ways. And so it's, yeah, so it's really, it's kind of a lifelong, and I think it applies no matter what your professional attainment or educational attainment or your circumstances are. When you go into something new, you're always sort of thinking, A, I don't know what I'm doing. And then on the other hand, I think, oh, this seems easy. I can do all of it, right? And so those that tension back and forth can really mess with your mind if you aren't pretty deliberate about creating some containers and creating some restraints in order to say, okay, this is my purpose for today. I'm not going to get overwhelmed by all there is to do and all there is to learn, but I'm also not going to get discouraged by the fact that I feel like I don't know what I'm doing. And that's a pretty fine line to walk, especially if you have kind of a predisposition to, what's the word? Imagination.
I thought you were going to say perfectionism.
That too.
Actually, Dallas, I think perfectionism and having an imagination, having a smart brain, having a fast brain, having a creative brain, having an imaginative brain, however you identify with that, there's always going to be a next level. And I'm a little tired of the discussion about leveling up and next level, even though I use those terms because they make sense and people relate to them. But you are talking about something that, on the one hand, we continue to evolve, we continue to progress, we continue to set higher goals, we continue to ask more of ourselves. And that's how people have this continuous personal evolution. That's what I call the path. But if you are not practicing other things that we are going to get into further in this conversation, like intentional constraint and radical self-acceptance, you are going to be on the never-ending path to feeling happiness, fulfillment, and a feeling of being enough is always out of reach.
Yeah, absolutely. That I really identify with that description of it. I mean, I think it's, we think we should have endless capacity. And I really like talking about this stuff in terms of capacity, because that seems like such a rational term. You know, it's not follow your dreams or be the best you can be or realize your true potential. It's really a recognition that there is a capacity limit, you know, and it's going to look different at different times in your life. When I was, you know, right out of school and before I had kids, I had capacity to work more. When my kids were little, I had little capacity to work. I actually was out of the workforce for about 10 years, staying home with my kids. And, you know, now at this point in my life that I'm re-engaging, I have that balance of capacity between what are my objectives in my personal life, my relationships with my family, and what are my objectives professionally, and And some of that for me is driven by a sense of I need to catch up because I, you know, am quote behind, finger quote. And so it's really that idea that capacity is a finite thing, even though we like to think that it's not, because we like to think unleash your potential, unlimited, the sky's the limit. But really then thinking about, okay, well, how I have 7 units of capacity in the next 8 hours, how do I want to allocate that? And I think that's one of the more helpful things, most helpful things that you and I worked on, is really in some ways both leveling up productivity, but also ratcheting down the expectation of the capacity that I actually have in my life and in my day.
Thank you for that. I really appreciate that, because I do think, I don't know if you've heard the term Dallas toxic productivity, but I learned it in another podcast interview. And I really think about, and also toxic entrepreneurship, this notion that, and there's some fantastic coaches, consultants, and leaders in the entrepreneurial space who literally help people get so much more out of themselves. And that's a beautiful thing. But it kind of has to be, as we've been discussing, coupled with an understanding, an appreciation for, an acceptance of, and I would even say a respect for your actual capacity. Because you can have all the plans, all the goals, all the dreams, all the visions, and fall madly and deeply in love with the idea that you're going to attain those things at a specific time. But someone close to you is sick or hurt or injured, or something unexpected comes up, or even something expected comes up that demands more from you than you thought it would, you have to be able to stop, drop, and roll into another plan, or you're never going to be satisfied, ever.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree with that 100%. I mean, I think it's just, it's a function of having high expectations of yourself and having, you know, having theoretical capacity. I guess there's a difference between theoretical capacity and actual capacity in some ways. And so I think that's it's a big gift to give yourself, to say, I'm going to say no. I'm going to, you referred to it once as, you know, living this kind of spacious mental and emotional lifestyle where it does seem like, oh, I could do this and I could do this and I could do this. And then pretty soon, you know, after you take on this and this and this, you realize I'm not getting anything done because I can't focus. I can't hardly sit still because I have so many to-dos rattling around in there and so many feelings about my to-dos. So I think that, you know, that capacity issue, it is something to acknowledge that it changes and that you really do have to look at your vision or your theoretical capacity with then sort of like the grim eye of reality and say, okay, this is what it actually is possible to do. Some of it's going to have to wait, maybe for another time, you know, maybe just something fun to think about.
And some won't get done ever.
Absolutely.
And I think that's, you know, we are in a culture that entices us. I would maybe even say seduces us into this notion that if you can imagine it, you can create it. Now, for the hardcore hustle types, it's like, I'm just going to double down and I'm going to make it happen. And then there's the more woo-woo types that are like, I'm going to vision board this. I'm going to manifest this. I'm going to put out some crystals. I'm going to whatever. Obviously, I'm less knowledgeable about that part, but maybe it's not crystals. Maybe it's something else. But anyway, I'm going to manifest this thing. But I think I would be really curious, Dallas, if you experienced either during our work together or after we finished meeting regularly, if you experienced any feelings of grief or loss that came with changing your mind about the I'm behind, I need to catch up, and I'm not, if I don't do all the things that I can envision, am I actually closing that performance gap? Because I work with really smart women. And I think sometimes we can have these very nuanced ideas about productivity and performance. And it's like, oh, I'm going to radically accept myself. And if I just need a rest day, I'm going to freaking take a rest day. And that means whatever was on my to-do list, on my schedule, on my planner, that's going to have to be redistributed to other slots on my calendar. And I'm going to feel 100% okay about it. But do we? Do you? And I think especially when you've been out of the workplace for a period of time, which I applaud you for taking that time with your kids, because I did not. And now, if any of my kids have kids, I really encourage my daughter, if you have kids, like dial down on your expectations because you'll never have that time back. I try not to have regrets, but I think if I had known how life would play out, that would have been something I would have done differently. You can have it all. You can do it all. Mm-hmm. You can be it all, but probably not at the same time. So I'm wondering what your current thoughts are about the needing to catch up and being behind. What are your current thoughts about that?
Well, I think, so to your comment on staying home with the kids, I mean, it was such a luxury and such a gift that I was able to do that. And especially, you know, I had just gotten this great education and this great career. And then pretty early into it, you know, we had this baby and then we had some more babies. And those years were just amazing. You know, they were so fun and I had a great time. But at the same time, you know, part of me, that whole, all those years was looking at job boards and, you know, looking at reading, you know, reading court cases and, you know, while they're napping or when I couldn't sleep at night and always kind of thinking like, oh, I wonder if I should be doing this. I wonder if I should try to get back into a career. I wonder if I should. So to your question about grief or loss, I would not say that I am experiencing that right now, like as a result of working from you. I think it's almost the opposite where I have been able to really tell myself, okay, this is a day that I'm not going to do anything. I may not get out of bed today. I may be in bed reading a novel, you know, whatever it is today. And this is just where I am today. Or I'm going to, you know, we're going to be going out of town with the kids on a Saturday, you know, doing errands, doing shopping, whatever it is. And this is just where I am today. And I even had at one point, I think it was while we were still working together, it was a Saturday. And a lot of times I would get up on a Saturday and I'd be like, okay, I want to do this and this and this and this and this. And it's just unrealistic. There's no way that all of that can be done, even if I was operating completely by myself, but much less trying to manage, you know, five other humans who all have their own agendas for the day. And I just remember having this like almost physical sensation of, oh, I need to stop. I need to just say, this is what I want to do next. It was probably go golfing for the afternoon. And then that will be enough. Even if that's all that gets done today, that will be enough. And I can just go into the next day and look at what needs to be done that day. So I think if anything, you know, through the work that we did and part of the closing that gap is the gap starts to disappear in some ways when you understand it better and you understand, you feel like it's this huge chasm between I'm performing down here and I could be performing up here. And then you realize, well, actually, you know, back to reality, the reality of the world that we live in and the reality of your situation at whatever point of your life that you're in, actually, I'm doing pretty good. I don't know if there's very many people who could do as well as I'm doing. And so just giving yourself that permission to think about that in that way was really really a change for me. And, you know, I shared with you early on, I'm practicing yoga, yogi, I guess. And I just think of this all as a practice. It's really a practice to say, I'm going to be okay with who I am right now. And it's a practice to say the things I don't like about myself, that's a behavior and I can change behaviors. Or a practice to say, I wish I had a behavior today of, you know, getting up early and getting going and all of that. I didn't display that behavior. Okay, now the next behavior I can choose. So it's just kind of an ongoing thing. And I think that you have a really, I don't know if it's your therapist background or just your life experience, but you have such a gifted way of just making that so matter of a fact and, you know, helping people to not have feelings about their feelings in some ways. And it's such a gift, you know, because I think we get so wrapped up in our heads sometimes and we feel, oh, I'm behind. Oh, I'm worried that I'm behind. Oh, I'm guilty that I'm worried that I'm behind. And it just cascades into this mountain of, and it's so debilitating, you know, because then you just get stuck in this, this whirlwind inside your own mind. And it's very difficult to get out on your own. But when you have someone who looks at you from the outside and gives you kind of this, what? sort of commentary, you're like, oh, okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah, maybe I could give myself a break. All right, cool. Much appreciated. I was very busy in here.
It's a really good point, and I so appreciate you giving me that feedback because I would say, yes, of course, my therapist background it informs a lot of my thinking. And mainly because I understand that in life, there is pain and there is suffering, which is how we emotionally respond to the pain. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then there's what I call unnecessary suffering. And that is all the mental fuckery that we inflict upon ourselves because of our thinking about our thinking. And I owe my perspective on that to chronic pain that I've been living with for over 30 years. And because of that chronic pain, it set me on a path of looking for answers in all the wrong places and a few of the right ones. But it actually led me toward Buddhism and to mindfulness and meditative practices and contemplation and stoicism and all of those things. And when I finally realized that a lot of what was so difficult about my life was because of the thoughts that I was thinking, point one, and that I could actually choose better thoughts that would cause completely different feelings. I would take different actions, have different behaviors, and literally transform my life from the inside out. I didn't have to move. I didn't need a new career path. I didn't have to get another divorce. Like literally, I could change my mind to change my brain to change my mind. That is everything. And I think I loved the way we worked together because I could actually see it. And we've talked a little bit about that. You've given me this feedback that it sort of broke down into phases. It's like we both agreed you had a performance gap, that you were capable of so much more. And the way I looked at it, Dallas, was not just that you were capable of being more productive, primarily at work, and capable of being more efficient at work, getting more done in less time, because I know how smart you are and how fast your brain works and the expertise that you have. But there was the lack of constraint that you chose. I mean, we put all the constraints on ourselves. We've been talking about the shoulds. Those are constraints. Thinking about what I should be doing right now, like, oh, I'm at work and I should be at my kid's game, or I'm at my kid's game, but I should be writing a brief. Like we're always somewhere other than where we are because we're thinking that we should be doing something different than what we're doing. And I think, you know, giving you some structure and a framework of intentional constraint, saying, listen, I got news for you, sister. I came from the generation of women who thought they could have it all, be it all, do it all at the same time. And most of us ended up multiple divorced with kids that don't even talk to us. So luckily, I have a couple divorces, but my kids love me. So at least I didn't strike out completely. But it's like, wait a minute.
You're doing great.
Thank you. If you do not put some form of intentional constraint in your life, you will not be able to close the performance gap. And I think that's kind of counterintuitive. So the first half of the work we did was, how am I going to hit this performance target, these billable hours, so that my law firm is happy with me and I don't feel like I'm behind? Because in fact, I am.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I'm not behind with my kids. I'm not behind with anything. It's like, that seemed like it was a really simple thing to fix. Like, oh, you just need to break it down and da, da, da. But I would love for you to reflect on that wasn't quite enough. It was a good start, but then we got into the messy middle. So I want you to take us both back and fill in the gaps.
Hey, it's Diane with a quick interruption to the episode because I've got a couple questions I just need to ask you. One, are you where you want to be in your business? Are you making the money you want to make, working the hours you want to work, seeing the clients that you want to see, and getting the income and impact that you went into business to get? And if the answer is no, what's holding you back? Why is there a gap between where you are and where you want to be? Do you know the answer? In my experience working with female solopreneurs, so many of them don't even really know what's standing in their way, and that is so frustrating. So I created a little quiz called What's Holding You Back? There's a link to it in the show notes. If this is you, please take the quiz. And if you do, DM me on Instagram at Coach Diane Wingert and let me know your results. Now, on the other hand, if you already know what's holding you back, if you already know what the obstacles are that are getting in your way from achieving the income and impact that you deserve and desire, then I don't want you to take the quiz. Forget about the quiz. Go directly to the other link in the show notes and book a consult with me. I may be the very coach, and this may be the year that you put all of that behind you and really have the business that you went into business to have. For everybody else, keep on listening. And if you find value in what you hear, don't forget to leave me a rating and review on Apple or wherever you're listening. Here we go, back to the show.
It's funny because at first I said I would never own my own practice, and now I own my own practice. And I would say, I'm never going to take it any more than just treating patients. Now I'm thinking about how can I start my own
institute? You know,
yeah, exactly. Even like training other therapists, having a certification with my name that I am, you know, I haven't thought of the name yet, but I'm certified in this technique or whatever the case may be. And really just helping other therapists help their patients the way I help mine.
Well, so you're right. It did really start out that way, sort of this, you know, here's some things you can do. And, you know, I think on one of our early calls, we set up a schedule. This is what you do in the morning, and this is what you do from 9 to 3. And, you know, I was at that point where and I've done coaching before, and I've, you know, another thing that was fun about working with you is you've read a lot of the same books and websites, and, you know, you've gleaned from just a lot of people who think about this space and who work in this space, some of the same ideas that I'd encountered. And we got to a point where I was sort of like, what are we doing? Like, I mean, if I could just set up a schedule for myself and work on that schedule, don't you think I would have done it by now? Do you think I would really be here? And I think that that's, I remember having one conversation with you where I made this like really bad analogy to sort of, we're building this fence, but there's also like little pieces of grass growing up along the fence where the mower doesn't reach or something. And that's kind of what I feel like is it's very much here. You can go from tactical to, you know, from, okay, set a timer and do this, to very high level. You know, this way of thinking is affecting you from being able to carry out, being able to execute. And what would happen if you thought this thought instead? And so it's interesting to reflect on those conversations. And sometimes, you know, we go from down in the weeds to the 80,000 foot view within 3.5 minutes, you know, in a conversation. But I think that both pieces of those you have to have. You have to have that marriage and meet it kind of in the middle. So I think at one point when we were working together, you know, I felt like, where was this going? What are we doing?
In fact, I think I brought it up, and mm-hmm. because I could feel like we were both feeling a little bit lost, and it was like, wait a minute, you know, you weren't doing the things that you needed to be doing. So I gave you the structure, I gave you the format, and you were like, okay. But then it was like, something's missing here. And I think, you know, the trust and the rapport that we had, it's like, we both want the same thing. And that is for you to close the gap. So if what we're doing isn't happening, let's figure out why and what we need to do instead. And I think that's when things started to get really exciting and fun. For me anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So one of the memories I have is, and it was pretty towards the end, I think, of the 12-week session, but I literally just decided, I spend a lot of time, you know, thinking about what if I got this job, or what if I'm not in the right job for me, or what if I, you know, should get out of law altogether and, you know, go into corporate or go into finance and all of that. And I literally, I think I was in bed or something. It was one of those random things. And I thought, what if I just decide to be the very best at my job that I have right now? And that was, I think, related to this, you know, connection of, if you have this high, lofty estimation of your capacity or the possibilities, and you have this sort of underperforming output, the way to get those closer together and bring them back together is really to say, okay, I have this overarching goal. I have these legacy goals. This is who I want to be. This is who I want to be to my kids, to my husband, to my profession, to my clients, to my colleagues. That's the constraint. And so now I'm going to start working on connecting the things that I do every day to that goal, not to some, maybe someday somewhere I might, if I could go back in time and have a different life goal, but to say, okay, so I have, you know, these very specific goals. And it's so interesting to me that, that middle piece is so hard to attain, because I think that instinctively it's very easy for us to set up, you know, I'm going to do a healthy habit tracker, or I'm going to do a savings challenge, you know, to get my finances improved, or I'm going to do some kind of education to improve my, you know, job possibilities. And then at the same time, we also have very big dreams that are very abstract. And for some reason, that middle ground is very difficult to say, okay, I want to do this at age 62. So what I do in the next 30 minutes matters in terms of getting to that age 62, age 72, age 102 objective that I have in sort of the strategic theoretical side.
This is especially true, Dallas, for people that are really smart and whose brains work really fast and they have a lot of imagination. Because the reality is, we can move in this direction, we can move in that direction. And when it gets messy, we always have so many other ideas. It's like, well, I'll just hop on another train, or I'll just go to another city. Or, I mean, I think at one point I said, well, if you decided not to be an attorney, what would you do instead? Of course you had 50,000 ideas, right? But it's like,
absolutely.
But asking yourself the powerful question, what if I just completely, deeply chose the life I already have? Mm-hmm. And the only thing I need to change is the thoughts I'm thinking about it. It's like mind blown. I think the also attaching the what I think you did really well was being able to identify the short-term goals, what I call the quick hits, with the big wins. But I would also say, because you're like, I know what I want to do in over the next 30 years. Cool. A lot of people don't. So good on you. But what do I want to do in the next 30 minutes? And then for you to be able to connect those two, I think it absolutely took that process time on your own, lying in bed, going back through the recordings, going back through some of your notes and saying, oh, there really is a path here, but there are a couple of pieces that actually need to be pulled together. I remember very distinctly you. Well, I think the other thing we definitely need to talk about is limiting beliefs about money and about attorneys. Mm-hmm. I think that's important. Mm-hmm. But I think you thinking, I can't really think about these things right now, and they don't really help me in the moment. But it was when you started thinking about, and we called them legacy goals, that it opened up so much in the moment. And I was even a little surprised by that. It's like, I haven't seen it happen before, but how it happened for you was really magical and transformative.
Yeah, I think it was really interesting. I think it just, you know, for some reason, hearing it from someone else's voice or through someone else's eyes made it seem, you know, so I have a, whatever your legacy goal is, it's sort of like, well, you could do that. And hearing you say that was like, oh, well, yeah, of course I could. And so all you have to do is, all I had to do was sort of think about it differently in terms of, yeah, I theoretically know I should, you know, if I want to, whatever it is, contribute to retirement or, you know, build this legacy with my family or whatever it is. It's just, it's so, I'm pausing because I'm just sort of like, it's sort of, you know, gobsmacking how obvious it is when you hear someone else say it, but you really just have to say, oh, I could do that. And then the first step is to, you know, do something with $25 or do something with 25 minutes. It was really a good experience in that way.
Do you remember the term that you used about wanting to practice? Was it outrageous generosity or?
Yeah. I had this idea that, you know, so when we started working and we did sort of the values exercise and all of that, and, you know, it pretty quickly became clear to me that I want to be successful and I want to be, you know, accumulate wealth and accumulate resources. I couldn't really articulate why. And I think that, you know, to your comment about everyone's money story, and that was a very limiting piece for me. You know, I grew up in a background where my family came from a farming background, had experienced things where, you know, they lost everything, they built it back up, and just always this constant fear, you know. And then also parallel with that, an idea that people who money comes to them easily, they must be doing something immoral or something that isn't, you know, quite kosher, quite upright. And so that was a piece of it. The other thing that's interesting, or that I think is a piece of it, is being a lawyer is a very interesting profession because at the bottom, at the end of the day, we sell our time for money. And so that puts a very clear dollar figure on your value, the value of your brain, the value of your time, the value of your, you know, yourself in some ways. And so that's really challenging to work through. And particularly, you know, coming from a family where we only went to see a lawyer if something really, really bad had happened. And it was going to be painful. And, or, you know, it's seen as something that's like, oh, well, all these rules, that's pretty fancy. I don't know why we need someone to explain that, you know, to work on this. That's, we could just do this with a handshake. And to some extent, you know, those feelings are valid and I understand them. But I think also it's important to, it was important for me to realize that the value that I give, well, I might not be for everyone. I mean, if that's the way you feel about lawyers and that's the way you feel about your business, then I'm probably not the lawyer for you. But I do have a role and I have a great value to people who are worried about how to protect their business, who are worried about making a misstep that will cost them a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of emotional resources if they have to deal with it. So I think just like making that shift to, it's almost a value neutral way of looking at it. Like, yeah, my hourly rate might be overvalued to some people. It's insanely undervalued to other people. I mean, you know, I'm in a small market and our firm's hourly rates are really a screaming deal compared to, you know, some areas of the country. And we do the same quality of work, same caliber of work, same types of work. And so it's really just this, it was a really eye-opening conversation throughout a couple sessions with you in terms of, not that money isn't real, but it's sort of, it's as real as you make it. It's as real as the thoughts that you have about it. And so to say, okay, well, this is who I am. This is what I do. This is how much it will cost. I think that one of the phrases you talked about is the right client who wants to work with me for the at the right time for the right reasons. And just having that idea of that person's not right for me, instead of, oh yeah, I'm too expensive. Oh, sorry. I should, okay, well, what if I just did it for free? Or what if I did it for, you know, just because it seems interesting. And, you know, we talked about trading dopamine for without dollars. And that was a big part of my practice was someone would come with something interesting and I'd be like, huh, I wonder how that does work, and go off and spend a bunch of time researching it and charge them $500 or something, you know, where it's consumed, you know, a week of my life. And that's not a workable model. So
it's so fascinating, though, because I think I told you about another client I have who's a college professor who does collaborative writing in her own independent business. And she had the same idea that you did. Her name is Emily, that if I'm enjoying the work, if I find this client interesting, if I look forward to working with them, if I find what I'm doing for them personally satisfying, it's not okay for me to charge them, or it's not okay for me to charge them what I charge other people. It's almost like I'm going to charge the people I don't like a bunch because I'm having to work with someone I don't like. But if I like them, I don't think I should. I'm like, this is really interesting. And I think because so many of us came from a working class background or a background where our parents owned a small business or a farm or something, and they physically, mentally, emotionally worked hard. Mm-hmm. They didn't always feel valued. They weren't always able to demonstrate their worth. And a lot of times they were resentful of highly educated people who charged a lot of money for a small amount of time. And I remember a very specific session with you where you were doing a lot of research because, you know, sometimes our brain doesn't know the difference between research and a rabbit hole. And we just really enjoyed it. And you got all this. And then you're like, okay, but I can't charge my client for all that. Okay, mm-hmm. Well, how much can? Well, I probably could have done it in a lot less time. But could you? Could you have come to the same level of insight, awareness, and be able to create the same level of protection for that client's intellectual property without doing that deep dive? But I think mm-hmm. those beliefs that were instilled from your family of origin about people who make a lot of money are greedy, people who charge a lot of money are like padding the bottom line, and even what a lot of people frankly think about attorneys. But I remember hearing if you've had some sort of need a heart procedure and the doctor can come in and do a 10-minute procedure on your sick heart and save your life, do mm-hmm. you think it not worth however many thousands of dollars because it only took him 10 minutes. It took him 10 minutes because he or she has been developing and honing their skill for years, and they're probably naturally gifted at it. What is the value of that? And I really saw your brain kind of struggling with that for a little bit. But I think connecting that to, like, when I'm meeting the needs of my firm, I'm meeting the needs of my family, and I can create abundance from that, I can create something that goes far beyond our immediate needs and feel really good about it. And that is the farthest thing from greed.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think it is really hard to shed that mental perception that work needs to be hard in order to be valuable. Like, and part of that too is, you know, even if you're in a professional career, to get there, it's very hard. You have to perform well in high school. You have to perform well in college. You have to, you know, do all the admissions testing. You have to get the letters of recommendation. It's difficult and it's grueling. And then if you get into your profession and you think, this is easy, this is enjoyable, I get to like solve puzzles in my brain, looking at regulations, looking at laws, I get to do that and earn money doing it. And it seems like that's not right. And so to your point of, you know, I would discount so heavily, but that does need to be done. I mean, the world of the law is not a static world. There's always things that are changing. And so you really do have to take the time to figure out, you know, do I know the whole story of the client's situation? And do I know the whole story of the legal landscape? And then how do I craft advice or an approach or a strategy that moves forward and takes both of those into consideration? But I think I really did get stuck early in my career of, this isn't that hard. I kind of know the answer. It's kind of fun for me to go find the answer. So how about I just, $50, you know, that's fine.
You were also, I think which the term you used, Alice, was selling from a hypothetical pocketbook, where you, I remember very distinctly you saying, well, I think that's too much for them. I'm like, why are you going?
Why would I know that?
Well, why would you? But see, it's just as easy to guess that by me protecting this person's intellectual property or solving another, because I know you work in other types of business law, if help this person solve their problem in a way that only my education, expertise, and attention can, how is that likely to play out in their business? Increased revenue, decreased expenses, increased profit, ability to grow. Like, why aren't we thinking along those lines instead of thinking, oh, I feel really uncomfortable sending this invoice?
And I mean, you know, I write the check for my car insurance and my home insurance and all of that. And I never think to myself, oh, I'm never going to use this, so I'm not going to write this check. Well, I mean, I have thought that to myself, but I mean, it's a similar industry, right? It's just the way it is. It's, you know, I don't litigate, so I don't really typically have clients that are in crisis at that moment. I typically work with people who have created a piece of intellectual property or are starting a brand and need a trademark or are taking on a business partner and want to understand, you know, want to document the relationship and the agreement between them. And so it's proactive problem solving. It's solving for hypothetical problems. Well, you know, the problem with that, there's 8 million hypothetical problems, you know, so again, you have to constrain down to the most common, but it is, it's just the same as I'm going to buy insurance for my new business's brick and mortar store, because if it burns down and all my inventory is destroyed, that's a bad situation for me. And so it was very helpful to work with you and talk through all of that. And, you know, you're very good at scripting. You're very good at, even though you're not super familiar with the legal industry, you know, you have this kind of human nature understanding of what if you talked about it this way. And we worked on some scripts. I think at one point, the most helpful scripts were the ones I had with myself, but also some scripts, you know, to talk to clients on the phone when someone calls and says, hey, I want this, but I only want to spend $500. Well, okay, here's your options.
This is what I can do for you. This is something I'm finding with so many of my clients. And again, I really appreciate the feedback on it. I'm just finding, first of all, we all have money mindset issues. We all have mental blocks about money. We have problems with communicating our fees. We feel that we have to defend them or justify them. A lot of people haven't raised their fees in a long time, even though everything in their life just keeps going up, up, up. So I don't think, you know, we're not crazy. We're not we don't hate money. We're not trying to sabotage ourselves. These are things that are cultural. There's social conditioning. There's feminine conditioning. Like, women are not supposed to be ambitious. Women are not supposed to talk about money. We are supposed to want to do things for others and not expect anything but a smile and a compliment in return. So I think there's just a lot of things to unpack. And I think you did a really beautiful job of it. And I think one of the suggestions that I made that I hold out for you, and I want you to tell me the minute this happens, is that, you know, we just had to clean up a few things. Like, you are working in your zone of genius. You have a beautiful life. You actually really like what you do. You needed to have some adjustments, like a mental chiropractic. But what I love for you is, I so love your idea of creating outrageous generosity and using the money that you create to fund things that are personally meaningful. And I also love the idea of, work doesn't have to be hard. It can be fun. I love the idea of you deciding what kind of clients you want to go after and recruiting them into your world so that you can serve them, so that you can rock their world and blow their mind, and absolutely love what you do. And then I want you to reach out to me and let me know, thank you for not letting me go be a yoga teacher like I wanted to. Because
that was one of my options.
I know, I remember. Dallas, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast and for giving us both the opportunity to recreate some of the delight it was for me to work with you. You are a very special human, and I am so happy to have helped you make those adjustments so that you can really, really thrive in what you're doing in the world.
I appreciate you so much, Diane. I think that what you're doing in the world and putting out there is just so unique and so valuable. And I'm just glad that the circumstances happened to align, that I came across your name. And it was at a time when I thought, this will work. This is something I could use. And it's just been transformational. It's been wonderful. So,
you know, what? Just because I have to throw in a blooper moment. I just this second realized that the person I was telling you about is the person that connected us. Well, hey, I do not. And I'm like, I just realized that. I'm like, oh my gosh, Diane. And I am not going to edit this out, because you know what? This is a part of my genius. I do not have the most reliable memory, but I will always accept myself and make fun if I can. So boom.
That's how this life works.
It sure is. Well, it can. This is what I choose. Yeah. You know, it's like, if I'm going to have my little bloopers, I might as well laugh and say, yep, that's just part of what you get.
I always tell my husband, that's very on brand.
That is a mic drop moment. I think we should conclude
with that. Very on brand
for
me, as you know.
Yes. Thanks again.
So, thanks so much for having me, Diane. It was wonderful.
Okay. Bye for now.
You've been listening to the Driven Woman Podcast with Diane Wingert. Want more straight talk and strategy each week that will take you from spinning to winning? Don't forget to hit subscribe in your podcast player so you won't miss a single episode. Then head on over to the Driven Woman free and private Facebook group community. See you there.